Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Mitchell Colbert is a journalist and educator who has written over 200 articles for over a dozen outlets, including High Times, Leafly, and Cannabis Now. He is also a co-author of multiple white papers focused on sustainability in the cannabis and hemp industries, and The Bud Tender's Guide, a companion textbook for the training course he helped to create at Oaksterdam University. Since 2018, Mitchell has lobbied around the United States to legalize the recycling of cannabis waste, specifically vape waste. He is currently a member of the SB 54 Working Group in California, representing the cannabis and hemp industries and implementing a first-in-the-nation plastic packaging EPR, or Extended Producer Responsibility Law. The ASTM International published Mitchell's novel study on cannabis consumer packaging waste last year, offering a first look at the types of and volume of consumer waste being created. Welcome, Mitchell, to Cannabis Radio.
Thank you for having me. I'm really familiar with HempFest, so happy to be here.
Yeah, I just totally wanted you on because I applaud your work on, you know, trying to push the cannabis industry into, you know, sustainability and environmental accountability. But I just kind of want to back up, you know, and this, I often ask this to my guests, how were you first introduced to cannabis, and when did you know that this is the subject or a subject you wanted to write about?
Sure. Like a lot of people in Northern California, I was kind of raised around cannabis. My parents grew in our backyard back in the 90s when it was definitely not legal. So I was one of those kids who was brought up with the don't talk about this to anyone rule, which, of course, I broke with some of my best friends. I mean, kind of hard to hide it when they're coming over to play at the house. But thankfully, no issues with Child Protective Services. Really lucky about that, I realized retrospectively, because could have gone a different way, you know. But cannabis was always around me. And when I was, getting into high school, reached a point where I just kind of said to my dad, you know, when am I old enough to try this out? And he was like, well, if you're old enough to ask the question, you're old enough to try it. You know, so first person I actually got to smoke with was my dad. Rest in peace. Love him so much. And a really nice, safe environment, because I know my dad's not going to give me anything that's crazy, right? Like, it's good quality stuff. I know he's vetting his sources. So it's always been around me. And I knew I wanted to write about it. Honestly, as soon as I decided I wanted to be a writer, you know, which was pretty early on in my life. And once I decided I wanted to write, cannabis seemed like a natural thing to be writing about. When I was in school getting my degree, my research topic was cannabis. I tackled it from every angle I could. I was writing about hemp cellulose-based biofuels back in like 2009, you know, when I was in school. So I was been on the hemp bandwagon pretty early on as well. Like, you know, cannabis is great, but the amount of things hemp can do, that's next level for saving the world. You know, anything oil is doing for us now, hemp could be doing for us in the future.
Oh yeah. I mean, and I've done so many shows on all of that. It's just, it's stunning. In fact, it's disconcerting that, you know, medical marijuana and then, euphoric cannabis has made much more headway earlier than industrial hemp, which is just counterintuitive. I guess it's just not as sexy. I've done over 400 shows. In fact, I've got to start looking because of my 420th show has got to be close. I believe. And I'm like, you know, what more can you possibly talk about about cannabis? And then I saw some of your articles. I'm like, oh, okay, that's what you can talk about. Can you just give us, you mentioned one, can you give us a quick example of some of the topics or kind of the range of articles that you've covered?
Sure. And, you know, I realized one piece I kind of like left out of the background too is I am a medical cannabis consumer. I consume for multiple reasons, mostly chronic pain now after a bike crash, but early on it was more like depression. So, when I say I first started consuming in high school, it was largely to manage those, medical needs. I do not advocate that everyone starts consuming as young as I did, definitely can't advocate that for everybody, but for medical needs, it's a different story. And topics I've covered, honestly, like anything you can think of. I had a really fun series I was doing for High Times over the last couple of years called Can of Beginners. And that series got to explore a lot of different things, not just the medical side of cannabis, what different cannabinoids, terpenes, and alkaloids do. It also got into different legalization efforts around the world. I got to write about cannabis legalization efforts in South Africa, in Japan, in France. I got to write about some iconic cultivars like Durban Poison, which, thanks to that, I actually briefly got put in touch with Skunk Man Sam. Rest in peace this week. I don't. Not sure if you knew him personally, but I mean, I'm feeling you might have. And I
Yes.
mean, real loss to the industry there.
Yeah. I just a weird factoid. Durban Poison was mentioned in the Humble Pie song 30 Days in the Hole, I think in 1972 when it came out, which is how long I've known about it, because I was like, what is that?
Yeah, yeah.
And so this all this stuff is really part of our heritage, and it's folklore, right?
Absolutely. I love that folklore. I haven't heard that before. That's amazing.
That's mine, thanks. I'm a word guy, but you've got a study that the ASTM published last year that provides, quote, a groundbreaking first look at the volume and types of cannabis packaging generated in California every year compared to other established waste streams like paint, oil, batteries, pharmaceuticals. First of all, what is the ASTM, and what can you tell us about your study and why it matters?
Yeah, so the ASTM, when it was first founded back in the 1800s, stood for the American Society for Testing and Materials. And they were first focused on like railroad, the standards of like railroad design to make sure that, when they made the Transcontinental Railroad, they had to make sure that was being done safely. And I believe that's, I think it's connected to that, or at least, the growth of the railroads in the late 1800s. But now the ASTM is international. And instead of just renaming it to something else, making the A something different, as far as I know, the ASTM at this point just stands for ASTM. So it's the ASTM International. They're still focused on testing and materials for anything you can imagine. I mean, like, no matter what discipline it is, there is something for you in the ASTM. It is a group of nerds who love talking about their particular things. Like, I'm on one ASTM subcommittee on vapes, and it is like the biggest vape nerds you can think about. It is the in-depth kind of philosophical conversations and technical conversations that, I thrive on. So the ASTM is really my community. The study and why it matters. So I came across this research that had been done on other what's called fast-moving consumer goods, basically looking at the weight of the product versus the weight of the waste. So that's the kind of thing I did for cannabis. Like, how much of the actual product you're buying is product versus garbage. And vapes, really kind of a shocking category. Like, if you total up all the external packaging, the battery weight, the weight of the cartridge, everything, and you can think about the fact that most cartridges contain roughly a quarter of a gram up to a gram of oil, just about 1.76% of that is the product. The rest of that is all waste. So, as you can see, sustainability for the vape market is very difficult because there's so much waste being generated. But it's not
Well, I
just the
mean,
vape
you've got
sector. The
single-use
in
vapes, single-use vape pens.
yes, yeah. So, like, for an all-in-one device, most of that is just going to become waste, garbage, e-waste, specifically, that has to go to a hazardous waste facility to be properly disposed of. But it's not just that sector. Every market sector you can think of. Like, here's a great comparison. So that other study I was talking about that looked at other industries. So when they looked at spices you'd buy at the grocery store, for instance, there's about 611% packaging weight to product weight. So that means there's like, six times the packaging as there is product. All right, well, let's talk about cannabis flower, which is the same idea, right? This is an herb in a glass jar. Just like those spices you'd buy at the store, you might think it'd be similar to that 611%. Actually, it is 2,700%, roughly 2,700 versus 611, almost five times as much waste weight as product weight. So even with that direct comparison to spices in the store, for whatever reason, our cannabis packaging is producing a much greater volume of waste. One thing that I hypothesize to be reason is child-resistant packaging. Child-resistant packaging really seemed like one of the main drivers for why waste weights were bigger after regulations went into effect in California versus before those regulations. I can't solely blame the regulators. There have been all kinds of market trends. Consumers are buying more vape pens than they used to. Companies also have decisions in what they use for their packaging. So there's a lot of pieces to this. But in general, we're producing a whole lot more waste than we were before the industry was regulated to mandate child-resistant packaging and warning labels. Warning labels were an unexpected driver of bigger packages as well. Because you think about a pre-roll, you don't need a lot of packaging there. But if you've got to fit like five or six different warning labels on there that must be in a minimum legally required font size, that's a minimum legal package size just to accommodate the warning labels. So that was kind of an unexpected driver too. And how it compares, our waste in California for 2022, it was about 13,103 tons of cannabis consumer packaging waste. So I got to note, this is just consumer packaging, not business to business packaging at all, not the unregulated market at all, just
Wow.
cannabis consumer packaging.
That
And how
that's
that
shocking.
compares,
Mitchell,
that is, yeah.
I gotta hold that. I gotta go to a break
Sure.
real quick. So
No
hold that and we're
worries.
gonna pick that
No
up here in
worries.
just a second. Come right back, folks.
Sure.
We'll be right back. We're gonna go to break real quick.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
We're back with Mitchell Colbert. Mitchell, I had to interrupt you. I apologize. Pick that up on
No worries. Yeah. So I
the
think.
shocking disparity with cannabis packaging weight.
Sure. Well, I think specifically where I was, how it compares to other waste streams out there. So I was looking at the data from CalRecycle. That's the, state agency in California that does waste management. And for 2022, that's what I was comparing to. And that 13,103 tons of cannabis consumer packaging waste was larger than the waste stream for recycled paint, oil, all batteries, and almost as big as pharmaceuticals. And since I am convinced for a number of reasons that my estimate actually is an undercount, I would estimate our waste total is actually on par with the pharmaceutical waste stream, which is, forget exactly, but it's a little over 16,000 tons. So about 3,000 tons over what my estimate was.
Wow.
So that's pretty notable. And the other thing that's notable is paint, oil, batteries, pharmaceuticals. We have infrastructure in place to recycle those things. We don't have that for cannabis packaging yet. And in fact, a lot of traditional waste haulers don't want to take cannabis waste because of the risk of cannabis residue, which makes it a Schedule One drug. And they don't have a license to take a Schedule One drug.
And of course,
Or the issue with vape
paint
pens
batteries.
is,
I'm sorry, go ahead. Let's finish
yeah.
that.
I was going to say, and I think you might have gone the same place I was. And the issue with vape pens is the small battery size, if they're not properly disposed of, it can actually cause a really big fire at a waste facility. So
Yeah, what I was going to
be
say is
very,
that paint, batteries, and pharmaceuticals are all toxic things for the environment. Cannabis waste really is not, except for the batteries in a vape pen, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily the fairest comparison because I can't say the whole waste stream is hazardous, but the vapes
Right.
are, and it is a large growing segment of the cannabis industry. And because of the potential, I mean, there shouldn't be residual solvents in any concentrates, right? But depending on who you talk to, the cannabis residue could make it a hazardous thing. So it felt like the best comparison that people in the waste management space would understand. Because really, like my target audience for this was people regulators, people in the waste management space, people who would see this and think, okay, I understand this comparison because I know how big of a problem paint, oil, batteries, and pharmaceuticals are.
Right. Right. And I guess I was really going off in a different direction, which wasn't as applicable, because even like, you know, trim leaf and stalks and root balls have to be, you know, which could just be, you know,
that wasn't being counted either, because that's
just,
you know,
be
that's
composted,
not be
right?
Packaging.
That could just be composted,
yeah,
but they treat it like
it should be, yeah.
They treat it like it's dangerous stuff. So
it's so silly.
It is. It's just more ridiculous where they treat cannabis like it's OxyContin light. So you mentioned, you kind of touched on this aspect, but what are some other primary considerations regarding cannabis packaging that address public safety, sustainability, and the environment that are notable?
Sure. Yeah. So I was just speaking at MJ BizCon last month on a panel, and while I was there, one of my panelists showed me a photo of something I'd missed on the sales floor that I had to like sprint over to go check out after our panel. And it was a vape product where the outer housing was paperboard. So instead of it being plastic, instead of it being metal, it was something that theoretically could be composted. The other nice thing, because it was paperboard, they had neatly printed instructions on the back telling you how to pop it open to get the battery out, to make it so much easier to recycle, because the battery, that is hazardous waste. That's got to be handled as a hazardous waste. That's per the EPA. That's a federal regulation. So no matter what state you're in, lithium ion battery per the EPA is hazardous waste, and it's got to be treated as such. And no batteries, even non-lithium ion batteries, should go in the trash. So the fact that this can have some removable battery, that's huge. That's a game changer. But it's not just this. I know three different designs. So not just the paperboard, but one, but two other designs where you can take the battery out. That is something people in the waste management space have been asking me for since I started lobbying back in 2018. Like, I mean, people have been asking for this for years, and we finally have it now. So in my mind, this is the first real innovation we've seen on sustainability in the vape space, like ever.
You know, dupe tubes are a big issue. And I actually, you know, have like some giant bags full of plastic dupe tubes that I picked up off the ground when I'm out on my walk, right? I see these plastic sleeves and dupe tubes. Mm-hmm. And there's a couple glass dupe tubes I found, but there's for a while there were some stores that had these cardboard dupe tubes. They're like telescopic, you know, made out of cardboard. And I'm like, why wouldn't we have a law that bans single use plastic dupe tubes, right? There's just no awareness out there.
In California, theoretically, that's what SB 54 might do. You know, because of the EPR fees, you know, there's going to be eco-modulation fees is what they call them. There's going to be extra costs to use plastic versus other materials. So that the idea is will cause people to think, all right, well, maybe I'll use ocean plastic, for instance. Like if you're going to use plastic, at least use ocean-bound plastic where it's being taken out of the environment and then processed into packaging, because then you're giving people an economic incentive to go collect it in the environment, which we need. We need people going out to the Pacific garbage patch and collecting all that. And then if we make it into packaging and recycle it effectively this time instead of in the ocean, awesome. So like if you got to use plastic, please at least use ocean-bound plastic or use other materials.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going to use plastic, make sure it's being repurposed at least, right?
Yeah. Or I mean, hemp bioplastics are great, but there you get into the problem on the disposal side where it can't be processed with other plastics. It's got to be processed with hemp bioresin technically, or it can contaminate the other plastic. So hemp bioresins are like it's a tricky thing right now. But like you said, glass, like I love glass dupe tubes myself. Like I think the classiest look is like glass with a little cork in it, or maybe a bamboo topper or something.
Yeah.
But it can be cost prohibitive. So I understand that some people can't afford the glass, the fancy packages, but you mentioned cardboard. I've definitely seen cardboard dupe tubes as well. Not telescoping though. That's neat.
Well, you know, the bottom line is saving humanity from a dystopian hellscape of climate change is, you know, not cost effective. Right. I mean, it's madness. It's madness.
We got to make it cost effective, you know, like,
yeah, well, what is not worth the cost? You know what I mean? Like survival of humanity, like, yeah, you know, you know, we had a great run, but we had some cheap Duke tubes. So anyway, we only have a couple minutes.
I think we see eye to eye on that. Like, yes, you know, the only market that matters is how long the market lasts for, how long humanity lasts for. Like, screw short-term profits. Can you profit over the next 1,000 years because we're still here in 1,000 years? That'd be nice.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we only have a couple minutes to the next break. Just last year, President Biden's Department of Justice moved to reclassify cannabis from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 substance. However, we're dealing with an entirely different political landscape today. How important is rescheduling and even descheduling cannabis, in your opinion? And what do you think the likelihood of a Schedule 3 reclassification is now that Trump is back in the White House?
Personally, I think descheduling is the way to go. But I think rescheduling is more practical, and rescheduling to Schedule 3, it would at least allow people to not pay 280E taxes anymore. So I consider that a huge win for the entire industry and the ancillary space, which I'm part of. Like, Schedule 3, better than nothing, but I would prefer, you know, we're all on team decrim or bust. Like, descheduling is where I really want things to be. Sorry, deschedule, not decriminalization. Different things, deschedule or bust. And how likely do I think that is? Really hard to say. You know, if RFK gets approved, I'm not necessarily a fan of him, but I know he supports legalization, rescheduling. If RFK gets approved, that's another voice there saying it'd be a good idea. Trump is kind of a mercurial guy. It's really hard to predict what he's going to do.
I mean, it doesn't fit into the culture war. You know, the scorched earth, Project 2025 culture war narrative.
Didn't mention it at all, though. To be fair, it's one of the few topics it did not discuss at all. So
no, I get
that. It left a blank slate.
Yeah. And it's making money. So it's just, it's, I'm not sure even they know exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see, you know, like I said, it's mercurial, it's different every day. We'll see what tweets come out.
Right. We have 1 minute till the next break. We had 1 minute. In 30 seconds, if somebody was listening and hoping to grow into a writer and have their content published in magazines or websites, what's like the principal advice you would give somebody starting on that path?
Yeah, I mean, mentorship is huge. Like, if there's someone who's writing that you like, try reaching out. I've found that a lot of creatives, not just writers, really open to talking to other folks. For me, I had a personal blog, and I turned a lot of my personal blog posts into some of my earliest articles. The great thing about a blog is you control what you publish. If you publish good content, it shows people your portfolio of your published work.
Very good. I'm talking to Mitchell Colbert. We're going to take another break, come back with our final questions.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back for our final segment with Mitchell Colbert. Mitchell, you're a man that's got his finger on the pulse of what's going on. What current developments or trends in cannabis are exciting you the most these days?
It seems like the industry is starting to kind of come out of its shell again. Like, you know how it is. It's boom and bust, and it's doom and gloom a lot of the time. And 2024 was brutal. 2023, honestly, wasn't that much better. Like, especially where I'm at in California, a lot of folks are going out of business, including like longtime folks who've been doing everything right. Like, I love Swami Select, Swami and Nikki, great people. I loved what they were doing. And in my mind, they're like the quintessential mom and pop cultivator who did everything right. Like, early adopters of being on YouTube and social media and all that, really amazing branding. They still couldn't make it work in the legal market here because it is such a mess right now.
And so many legacy people are losing everything that have 50 years in the culture.
And the knowledge that is being lost with them is just, I can't even believe it. It's unfathomable. I don't think anyone has probably calculated the loss that's going on right now, intellectually. And not just intellectually, like, there's people who depend on the medicine that is being made from these products. And I feel like even the recreational market, even the adult use market, it's still medicine, because there's no way to take the medical effects away from these cannabinoids. I don't care if you're smoking just to get high. It's going to still make you more calm. It's going to still relieve your stress. It's going to relieve your pain. It's going to help you sleep. That's just what cannabinoids do.
Right, right.
So yeah, I'm hopeful that things are going to get better, you know, in this year. And that's what a lot of the economic experts were kind of forecasting, like Bo Whitney, I think is the guy's name. I spoke to him for an article last year, and you know, he was like, you know, I think things are going to be a lot better in 2025. So I want to believe that we're still going in that direction, where this is going to be a year where the industry can thrive. Rescheduling would be great if that happened, because that would help everybody thrive. So, you know, we'll see.
And there's just a general uncertainty about the path that economics are going to take in this country with this tumultuous administration we have. It's nobody can really read the tea leaves. Do you agree?
Yeah. You know, like I said, mercurial is kind of my word for this administration. You know, it's, and for those like who aren't familiar with the $5 version, uncertain, hard to know, you know, like the planet Mercury, like the,
unpredictable, it's, right?
Yeah. Unpredictable. Like, I mean, it's just like, I don't know, you know, like, well, I want to hope for the best though, you know, like I really want to hope for the best, because that's who I am. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm a hope for the best, plan for the worst kind of guy, right? You still got to plan for things to go sideways, and hopefully they don't.
Yep. Yeah. I was brokenhearted to see, you know, Nikki and Swami, losing their business. They had such a great brand. They're such good people. I had them on my show actually. And yeah, I mean, the kind of the mother and father of the California, cannabis, you know, tribe in a lot of ways, the Northern California.
I knew them through working at Harborside, and I always loved the stuff they brought in. I mean, it's like, even amongst other legacy farmers, I don't know what they do differently. I mean, I do. I've been up to their farm. I saw the Sri Lanka and everything. Like, the amount of effort they put into their plants, it's really beyond a lot of, I can't, you know, I don't want to say everybody, but beyond, I've seen a lot of grows, and they really put a lot of work into their plants.
We have about a minute left. We have about a minute left, Mitchell. You've got it going on. You're a lobbyist, technical writer, researcher, communications professional, project manager, and more. If somebody wanted to contact you, how would they go about it? And lastly, what final thoughts would you like to leave us with?
Sure. You know, probably best way to reach me, LinkedIn. I'm super active on LinkedIn. Just look me up by my name, Mitchell Colbert. I'm on Blue Sky now, but you know, LinkedIn's probably the best for business. You know, from there we can, you know, talk more by email or, final thoughts. Thank you so much for everything you've done, Vivian. Like, I know you've been at this grind a whole lot longer than I have. So I appreciate all the work you've put in with HempFest to get things to where they are, to where I was able to jump in to help get, you know, like, it's an effort where every generation of cannabis activists builds on the one before them. So thank you for being that earlier generation that helped cannabis activists like me have a place to actually get started.
Thank you so much for that. And absolutely, man. And it's so exciting to see that, that our culture is surviving, and evolving, and that we've achieved so much. We still have a long ways to go, but we have achieved so much, man. And who could have ever predicted that you'd be going into a brick and mortar pot store and getting in your car, driving off, and that you wouldn't have to look in the rearview mirror? So we're definitely getting there. All right, thank you so much, Mitchell. Yeah. I wish you so much luck in all your endeavors.
You too. Thank you so much for having me.
You bet. The Hemp Present intro music, 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music, Take Back the Plant by Sticker Bush. See you next time, folks. Stay strong. Marijuana.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal.
All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.